This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Do they have a pulse? Houston Astros. They look dead. Then all of a sudden, Yordan Alvarez gets hit. Astros are up for five runs in an inning in a losing effort to the Rangers, but then they don't look back. They win the next two. Astros 4-3 against the Rangers. 2-8 against everyone else. Taking on the Braves today. Is this team showing a pulse?
I think they're showing a pulse, but I think more than anything, they're showing their identity. We talk about identity a lot on the shows for all of the teams that we discuss. And with the Astros, I feel like they made a pivot somewhere after 2019 to where the identity started to be really how good the pitching was. From the starting pitching to even the bullpen at various spaces. I know there was that one year, maybe 2021, they had an issue with the bullpen, but for the most part, the pitching has been, I feel like, a big part of the Astros' identity. This year, so far, it feels like, man, if they don't score a bunch of runs or get a no-hitter from a 30-year-old rookie, then they can't win the game. I was looking at this,
that's
man.
That's a hell of a recipe.
Look
there.
At that formula, and it does not feel sustainable. So, like, I'm celebrating the weekend. I like to get to win the silver boot, especially when it's here. But I'm looking at him like, man, they need this lineup to be lights out. And we talk about timely hitting, man. We need them to score eight runs or more damn near, like just to win a game. So, I mean, I like what I saw over the weekend, but it is starting to become a lot clearer to me that the pitching is tough to rely on. Shout out to Christian Javier for being durable and, you know, having a quality start, being able to go, you know, seven innings for him yesterday. But, like, your best pitchers right now are Christian Javier and Ronel Blanco. Like, that's where we're at. And then, you know, you're playing Atlanta with Spencer Arrigetti and J.P. France and, like, basically the worst of
Hunter Brown.
And Hunter Brown, the worst of your rotation. Like, they're showing a pulse, and I think we know what they're good at. They're going to have to lean into that in order to just sustain this time period until their starters get healthy.
The problem that they're in right now and the problem that they face, especially in these next few days, given the way that these guys have pitched, is one loss turns into two because you have these starters that go three innings or, three plus innings or even less. Hunter Brown, last time he was out there. And then your bullpen is basically fried for the remainder of series. And all of a sudden, one loss turns into two. And that's the problem that they have right now. They're only 10% through the season. But, and we could get Verlander back this week, which would be nice. But what is Verlander like? How much is Verlander going to give you? It's a recipe that's clear. I think they just need to rake, but they're in a real dangerous spot because who knows what you're going to get from these starters. And when they go out there and they wet the bed like they did, your bullpen just gets completely fried.
Yeah, you asked if they have a pulse, but they're still like sick. You know, like they're like in the hospital, they're bedridden. Like, I don't think it's like desperate, you know, but you look at it and the roster is just so flawed at this point, man. Like from the depth of the rotation to the middle relief, the issues that you have there, your biggest investment in the offseason was a closer and you haven't really given them many games to close. Obviously you did yesterday, but I just feel like the holes in the roster this early in the season have really just been exposed. And they have a pulse because they have that lineup. Like, that is the pulse. You know, you talk about waking up a sleeping giant hitting Yordan Alvarez. Well, they can only respond to that because they got, you know, the top of that lineup is can rival any other in baseball. But outside of that, I mean, it's a lot of holes. It's a lot of side eye going on.
Meanwhile, with the Texans, and by the way, we're going to hear from D'Amico, CJ, and Will Anderson coming up in an hour. First public words, I'm assuming, in regards to Stephon Diggs. The Indianapolis Colts, while the Texans don't have a day one pick, the Colts are sitting right there at 15. And they haven't really done much this offseason. They did give DeForest Buckner a two-year extension earlier today. They're visiting with a lot of receivers, though. Xavier Worthy, the Texas Longhorn record holder of the combine, he visited with the Indianapolis Colts, and it is interesting. I do wonder what exactly Indianapolis is up to and what the heck they're going to do, because they're visiting with pretty much every receiver.
Yeah,
could they be looking to add someone opposite Michael Pittman and give Anthony Richardson and Shane Steichen more weapons right there at 15? Is that a trade back? Do they take Xavier Worthy at 15? Are they in the Brock Bowers mix? What exactly is Indianapolis doing? Because you got to think, and I'm not going to say they're going to try to overcompensate, but with how quiet they've been in free agency, you got to wonder if they're going to save their aggressiveness for the draft, while teams like the Texans, Titans, and Jags, they've been a little bit more aggressive during the other phase of the offseason.
Well, have they been quiet, or have they been more on the running back season? Because they had some free agents, and they just brought a lot of them back. So they've been, in large part, on running back season. A lot of that had to do with Michael Pittman, right? So you bring back Michael Pittman, but you haven't really added much. So to me, you look at the Colts, and some of their obvious weaknesses is not having a lot of wide receiver depth or a lot of wide receiver help outside of Michael Pittman. So there's just such an obvious and clear need for them. And that's what scares me about Xavier Worthy.
What could the Colts do that would scare you?
Oh, man, if they draft Xavier Worthy, if they're able to nab Xavier Worthy and add him to Shane Steichen, who we've talked about a lot being one of the better up-and-coming offensive minds, maybe an underrated head coach from last year, and then Anthony Richardson, like, I don't know how good he's going to be, but I do know that the dude is strong enough to throw it deep to Xavier Worthy. And if Xavier Worthy can catch it, and we know he's had some ups and downs with that from watching him at Texas, but if he can catch it, I feel like Anthony Richardson can get it to him. I feel like Shane Steichen can scheme it up. And so that feels like the perfect scenario to put a young weapon like that into. So I'm not afraid of Indy, but I'm like cautiously watching them in the rear view. They're basically like right there next to you. And then they add a weapon like that to me, I feel like that can add another dimension to what they do. Xavier Worthy on the Colts.
So you think if they draft him at 15, are we trading back or
No. I don't think they're drafting him at 15.
I mean, that's too early, right?
Yeah, that's got to be way too early. But I'm just saying if he winds up on their team. But, like, nah, they're not drafting Xavier Worthy more than likely at 15. That would seem like a stretch. However they get him, though, I think it would be scary for the Texans having to match up with that speed.
I just don't fear, and maybe this is me being false, I don't fear the quarterbacks, the second-year quarterbacks in the division. I don't fear Anthony Richardson. I don't really fear Will Levis.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of borrowed time.
Yeah, I don't fear him. I think it would be ridiculous to fear him based off of the dude that you got, right? Like you've got C.J. Stroud, but there is that uncomfortability of the unknown. Like, I'm not fearful, but I'm not, like, comfortable with the fact that I haven't seen a lot of him, right? Like, and I think I've seen enough of Will Levis to feel like he's a tier below. But Anthony Richardson, in that scheme, under that coaching with Shane Steichen, I feel like if there's anybody, and I've said this before, I feel like if there's anybody that can tap into it, it would be Shane Steichen. If it doesn't work there, I don't see where it's going to work. But, dude, I could see it. Like, he made Gardner Minshew work last year, and I know you were kind of tongue-in-cheek but also serious saying that they were better off with Gardner Minshew.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
I know you did, but Gardner Minshew's not good. So, like, if Anthony Richardson's got anything – like any, if there's anything to this talent there with Anthony Richardson, he should be better than Gardner Minshew.
See, so my biggest fear in this division, and it's not even a player. My biggest, like, the fear that I have most in the AFC South is Shane Steichen. I don't think he gets near enough credit. And I know that sounds weird. I'm not even talking about you. I mean, he didn't finish top five in Coach of the Year. That's asinine to me.
Well,
so
Did they vote after he put the third string running back?
Give a damn when they voted. That was a good play call.
It was a good play call. Well, I mean, but you're in charge of your personnel groupings too, though.
But I have a healthy amount of fear of Shane Steichen. That's the guy that I fear the most in this division.
You should be damn terrified then. Give Shane Steichen an alien.
Not with Anthony Richardson though.
All right. Well.
That doesn't scare me. I think that can be the kryptonite. But I do feel like
I wonder how much you really believe in Shane Steichen then.
I do feel like there's a higher floor with Shane Steichen. I think he's 100% going to coach up whoever he gets. And it's also addition by subtraction, because I think it was clear that Philadelphia missed him too.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not just what you're doing, it's what happens when you leave. And Philadelphia seemed to miss Shane Steichen.
I don't know about Anthony Richardson's makeup in the way that I feel like we do with Jalen Hurts. And I know you don't like this comparison because of what Jalen Hurts was able to do in college. He was a more accomplished quarterback coming into the league than Anthony Richardson. But I did see enough of Anthony Richardson to think, hey, physically, talent-wise, there's no reason why he can't. If he's got similar coaching and is willing to take to it, I don't see why he can't be what Jalen Hurts was 2 years ago. I don't see why his lack of college experience and success would preclude him from being able to do that under the same coaching with Shane Steichen with the physical tools that he's got. So I'm basically looking at it like, not to say that the Colts are going to the Super Bowl, but I could totally see Anthony Richardson being Jalen Hurts with a little bit more to him physically with Shane Steichen as his coach.
I also think, and maybe we're talking ourselves into the Indianapolis Colts being a better squad, I also think that Jonathan Taylor is one of the more scary guys in the division when it comes to being able to kind of control a game. And we saw him last year, he was kind of banged up. He didn't get his contract. But on the back end of the year, he had three of his final four games. He had over 90 yards. He had five touchdowns in those 4 weeks. We saw him go for 188 against the Texans when they needed him most. 32 carries. They've satisfied his financial demands. He kind of seems to be all in. You put him back there with Anthony Richardson, I think that's a little bit scary too. I mean, he's Derrick Henry's out of the division. They have Steichen and they have Jonathan Taylor.
So so the NFL Network was showing the Texans Colts game from the final week of the season over the weekend, right? I was trying to decide stuff to watch. I landed on that.
You peeped that?
I did peep that for a little bit. And just kind of a side note here, I will point out that after rewatching that game, I can see a little bit of where the Texans grew impatient with Malik Collins. Was it a great game?
Oh, your guy?
Was it a great game for me? I was like, for a little while, I was keying in on Malik Collins. I was like, you know what? He's kind of getting pushed around a little bit. He's kind of finding himself in the wrong position. Oh, he's got a drive-killing penalty. In this case, a drive sustaining penalty for the Colts. So like, yeah, my eyes were open to that, and it makes me think about Jonathan Taylor, how he was carving him up. That's going to be a problem. Like going back to the Xavier Worthy point, you got Anthony Richardson, who can make a case for being the best athlete on the field at any given time. Jonathan Taylor and Xavier Worthy, a trio with that. And then, I don't know, you just throw Michael Pittman out there as an option to throw the ball to. Yeah, I think that's something to put a pin in and pay attention to for the Texans fans. Don't sleep on the Colts.
Yeah, I wouldn't sleep on the Colts. I wouldn't sleep on the Jags either. I mean, they could have easily won the division last year. I'm almost worried about the D-line now, because they have Josh Allen, who just got paid, and then they have Walker, and now they just added Armstead. Depending on what happens with Armstead, you might have really one of the more athletic D lines in the league.
Yeah,
I don't even know if it's debatable. One of the more athletic D lines in the league.
Nah, I mean it's not debatable. I came on here last week and was saying it, man. You look at the teams, and I know we're putting the Titans to the side a little bit. They're kind of like Tennessee's like the little brother right now, but they did take the offseason seriously. I don't know what they're gonna do.
No, they got aggressive.
They got aggressive.
Now were they reckless or were they smart? They got really aggressive though.
Is it controlled aggression? Is it smart money? Smart big money, or like how y'all like to say? I don't know. We'll have to let it play out. But we can't look at them and act like they're not trying at the very least. Like they're trying to do something.
They don't have an identity though.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I thought it was going to be a rebuild. Now they're all in. I can't figure it out.
It is going to also come down to, and I think the answer is no, but it is going to come down to, is Will Levis good? Like, what if Will Levis is good? Now we got an issue. And it goes back to what I was saying last week about this division having a chance to be one of the better ones in all of football. If he's even kind of good, I think all three of the other teams are good. Like, the Texans are good.
What if he stinks?
The Colts are good.
What if
the
he
Jags
stinks?
Are good.
What if he stinks?
Now, if he stinks, that helps.
Then you know something
and
nobody's talking about?
It's dumb bad money.
You know something that nobody's talking about if he stinks?
Oh, Malik Willis is their backup?
No. No, their backup's Mason Rudolph.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yikes. They got Mason Rudolph. You know what nobody's talking about if Will Levis stinks? That the Will Anderson trade actually allowed them to bring Will Levis into the division to the Titans because the Texans traded that 33rd pick to the Cardinals, and then the Cardinals traded it to the Titans.
33 was the Texans' pick originally.
So there's almost like an X factor, almost underrated aspect of that trade where the Texans not only went up and got the defensive rookie of the year, who, by the way, we'll hear from in about an hour, but they also got Josh Allen, a.k.a. Will Levis, to the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
There's an element right there. That's nobody's talking about.
What if he's great? And
he ain't great.
And it kicks him in the ass.
Let's slow down a little bit.
Hey, no.
Let's take great out of it.
Thank God for CJ. I'm just saying, what if he is? What if he turns out to be great? I know we're probably going to get to this later, but I know you saw some NFL media types holding water, carrying water for the Titans and how they believe.
The Starbucks baby, he put down the coffee. He's got
man,
the water.
They believe. And Will Levis as a leader.
That's the Starbucks baby.
He carries, what did they say? He carries himself like the franchise quarterback.
No, he
Damn
said,
it, he
Jordan
better.
Schultz said it.
He better carry himself like the franchise. He drafted 33 overall, and the best thing they had behind him was damn Ryan Tannehill and Malik Willis. Like, yeah, this is your opportunity, dog. This is your Davis Mills 2022 season.
I think there's like a satisfaction with the Titans moves too, where they took Snead from the Colts, according to reports, and then they took Ridley from the Jags. So I think there's almost like a certain level of satisfaction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just look at them and think they are aggressive. They have a quarterback that they drafted 33rd overall the previous year who did show some things. Like, I just don't want to act like they're not there. I don't want to act like the Titans aren't there. As much as I don't believe in Will Levis.
All right.
There is
Have fun with that.
There is a what-if factor there. So you're going to go about it like that, just overlooking the AFC South opponents?
I'm overlooking the Titans.
All right.
I'm not overlooking anyone but the Titans. I'm overlooking them.
All right.
That's it.
I'll take that.
I'm not overlooking the Colts. I'm not overlooking the Jags. I'm overlooking the Titans.
All right. Now, when Will Levis start throwing them bombs to Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins, I'm like,
Okay.
Jeff Okuda, get out there. Get out there, dog.
All right. You know what would be worse? If Mason Rudolph come in
and
start rolling like it's the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Getting crazy now.
Yeah, get them to like 8-9 or something. Yeah.
Getting crazy now. That's what's going on in Tennessee. Are you a line jumper, Figgy? When you hit the buffet, are you a line jumper? When is it okay to jump the line?
Nah, I never do that, man.
Never?
Nah, I never do that.
What if someone's like at the salad bar and they're taking a long time?
Oh, if they
and
got
you
four
hop
orders,
the pizza.
Yeah, dude. Did they got? Hey, I want four plates.
Yeah,
yeah. Let me get my one.
It really depends. If they there for a long time, then I would say something and try to squeeze in. But
now, if you jump the line though, and then they see you, like let's say there's one piece of pepperoni pizza, do you take the one piece and not even worry about it and just go about your business, or do you kind of look back and see if they're kind of eyeing it?
Oh man, that's way too courteous. Y'all are friendly.
You just throw it on the plate and roll.
Yeah, man. Do they not make pizza back there? They gonna bring some more out. Yeah, man. It ain't my job to preserve the pizza for the rest of the customer
base. I'm way
base.
Too courteous, man.
Nah, man.
So you'd be like, hey, do you want that? What do you do? How far do you take this courtesy?
I would say, hey, you want? Hey, you grabbing that? Oh, you could grab it. Go ahead. I'll wait. I actually want to wait to get the fresher pizza.
I like the pizza that's out a little bit longer. I don't like the real hot. I kind
of
want it out.
Burn the roof
bit.
Of your mouth. Now I'll sit there in the line and start calculating. All right, I hope this many people don't want pepperoni.
Yeah.
How many? Like, will there be one? Oh yeah.
If there's half a meat lovers up there, and you have like four big dudes, you're like, man, that's gone.
Ain't no love in this world, man. I ain't expecting nobody to do nothing for me. So like, I'm doing my calculations.
I wish I had
while I'm in the line. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get that. And if not, man, nah, when I get there, man, first come, first serve, dog.
Brandon Scott Greedy. Let's talk about how Nick Caserio and company could get greedy in the next couple of weeks. Also going to hear from CJ, Will Anderson, and D'Amico Ryans within the next 40 minutes. In the Loop continues next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Greed can be a good thing. Greed can be a bad thing. Could the Texans get greedy at the wide receiver position? They've already brought in Stephon Diggs. They got Nico Collins. They got Tank Dell. Do you think there's any scenario where on day two of the draft, the Texans draft a wide receiver? Or do you think they're just going to keep it moving there? Could we see some greed?
The greed comes in the supply, right? What have we talked about with this draft, or what have you heard draft nerds talked about? The deep wide receiver class. There are guys that are going to be available, and I think running back is a little different here because it's more of an undervalued position, so I think there will be high-quality running backs available to you in the second round. But with the wide receiving position, it's the depth of it to where – a Ricky Pearsall from, and I think I'm saying that right, from Florida, could be available to you. A Troy Franklin from Oregon could be available to you.
He's had 17 visits, I think.
Dude, these dudes are going to possibly be there waiting on you. And it's like, okay, do I pass on that? Would it make sense to you? Loopholes, y'all let me know if it makes sense to you to pass on a talent like that, depending on how much you like them. But does it make sense to you to pass on a talent like that that could be a first-round talent in other drafts because you've got one more year? You've got 1 year of Stephon Diggs.
1 year of Nico Collins. One more year of Noah Brown.
Like, I mean, it's a do-or-die year for John Mechie. It's a cap casualty possibility type of year for Robert Woods. Like, if you're thinking about 2 year increments, okay, here's a guy that's going to be on your, would be on your roster for the next, you know, 3-4 years if it works out. Wide receiver position, depth there, and possibly bumping him up in the pecking order. So to me, I don't want to dismiss the idea of them drafting wide receiver just because of the quality of talent that's going to be available to them at that spot. I think that's going to be kind of too much to overlook, even if they might end up with a defensive tackle or a cornerback. There'll be all kind of positions available, but wide receiver is going to be among them. And you don't just look at the position group and be like, oh, I got Stephon Diggs now, we're good. Oh, I got Nico Collins and Tank Dell now, we're good. Tank Dell, the only one of those three that's under contract past this year.
Yeah.
So, to me, you should be planning for the future.
Well, yeah.
And trying to stockpile talent.
And that's what you just said. B. Scott in for John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. We'll hear from CJ, D'Amico, and Will Anderson in a second. That's the thing that I think they still need to look at is the future. Because would it shock me if the Texans were a AFC or Super Bowl contender this year? No, it wouldn't. I mean, there's a lot of pieces. There's a lot of reasons for optimism. But I don't think you all of a sudden start functioning like you're the Kansas City Chiefs and you're like, what you're looking at it in almost a 1 year window where it's like, all right, we got to add this receiver, or we got to add this one position. I do still think you need to acknowledge that 2 year window. And if you're looking at the 2 year window and you're looking at next year and what the state of the team's going to be, there's a chance that wide receiver is going to be a dire need, or you're going to have to figure something out. Even if you bring back Nico Collins, because if you're not going to bring back both Nico and Stephon, then you're going to have to decide between that, and then Noah Brown, Robert Woods are going to be a year older. So it could end up being a dire need, and it's not like you're drafting someone and putting them on the bench. They can help you this year. So I do think that as exciting as things are right now and as good as they can get, and as much as we're throwing out words that we haven't been even imagining throwing out the last few years, I don't think you completely abandon that two-year window when it comes to making decisions.
Right now as we sit here, all right, just a few days ahead of the draft, what feels like if you had to guess, what do you feel like the likelihood of them being able to bring back both Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins would be? Like, if, and especially if everything works out the way you want it to, not if, you know, they bomb the season and, you know, or a guy gets hurt or anything like that. Like, these guys are healthy. They're contributors to you. They play relative to their expectations, and the Texans are doing a lot of the things that you expect them to do. What's the likelihood, feel like, of even bringing both of those guys back anyway? Like, so you're still going to be – I feel like either way, you're going to be in a similar position as you were this year. You'll probably have at least two receivers that you feel good about, because you're going to – I feel like you'll probably bring back at least one of them. But the likelihood of bringing back both of them feels pretty low to me.
Yeah, it feels low. And if you do, I think even then you're looking at Stephon Diggs, like, what, he's going to be 31? You're going to give him a two-year deal or something?
Right.
I mean, it's not like he's going to go on the market and get a five-year deal or something like that. So where would that be? That would still be kind of short-term. So I just don't, you know, there's some teams that function where you're one piece away from a Super Bowl. I like the Texans roster. I think there's a lot of reason for hope. I love the way that the coaches tend to coach these guys up, but I don't think they're to the point right now where you're a move away from a Super Bowl. And I think if you are, then I think it can be something impactful. Like, the Lions, they didn't necessarily need Jahmyr Gibbs last year, and they drafted him. They took Laporta in the second round. That was kind of what propelled them to getting to where they hadn't been in a long time. So I'm hoping that they're still keeping that two-year window, that mindset somewhat open as they approach this draft and they look at the state of the roster and everything that they can do with these pieces that they have, as well as the pieces that they can add.
But, and this is also, to me, the benefit of getting the previous offseason right and then this offseason right leading up to this point. So let's just think of it with this draft now. I know the offseason's not over with, but leading up to this draft now, you've gotten two straight offseasons where you've got things right. You've got some institutional pieces, the most important position, obviously, with quarterback. Feel good about your head coach. We know all the other positions that you feel good about. This is the benefit of getting those two off seasons right, to where now you're picking with these two picks in the second round, you're in a position where you don't have to sit there and say, hey, I gotta have this because we don't have a foundational piece at this position or in this position group or whatever it is. No, we've got good bones here and we can just take swings at players that we think raise our ceiling.
And I think that's where it gets better, too, is if you can keep getting guys on rookie deals, then I think you benefit. So if they do decide to take a wide receiver, and let's say that wide receiver performs similar to what Tank Dell performed last year, then all of a sudden, like when Nico comes up, if you're having the discussion, if you draft a wide receiver and whatever wide receiver you like ends up just completely setting things on fire like Tank did last year, if you're having the discussion, well, should we keep this guy on his rookie deal or let Nico Collins walk? That's not, you could be having much worse discussions because eventually it's going to catch up. That's why Buffalo, Miami, that's why they had to do what they did this offseason where they said goodbye to folks. So if you put yourself in position to where you can let some guys walk and you can replace them with young guys on rookie deals, I think that's kind of the key. I think that's kind of the puzzle that I think all GMs should be trying to figure out is how do we get guys on rookie contracts that can perform at the elite level, and then all of a sudden you can churn the roster and keep upgrading. That's what they need to do.
Yeah, it's why I also didn't want to get too fixated on the idea of Stephon Diggs being the number one wide receiver. Like, we understand him coming in being the most accomplished guy, that he's the number one wide receiver, but for the Texans' benefit, this could play out in ways where, like, okay, well, what if he's not? You let him go next year. Hey, Nico Collins emerges. That's somebody that you pay. And then, by the way, you drafted some guys to, you know, between Tank Dell the previous year. And then if there's another guy that you draft this year, to where you still feel like that you've got a pretty decent staple of wide receivers. Like, it doesn't, to me, I like the idea of, instead of just automatically assuming that Stephon Diggs is going to be the top receiver on this team, which he might be, looking at it as a wide receiver number one tryout. There's three guys on the team that you feel capable could or are at least capable of being a number one on any given day. See how that plays out. Add another dude into the mix, and you feel like you got some depth there. Like, to me, again, it is the benefit of having a high floor team. Now you can focus on your ceiling. I'm with that.
Yeah. Don't stop playing chess just because things are good.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing. Stay true to that.
I feel like you've already got a pretty high floor, man. Like, you're
it's high.
It's you're you are not. I would be shocked if the Texans are a bad football team this year. So now you just focus on, you know, sprinkle a little bit on top. I mean, it's the benefit of it. I don't know, man. Soak it in. Soak it in, Texans fans. Like, you can bring in an extra receiver. You can go running back in the second round because you've got all of these things going for you already.
Yeah, if they fall in love with the running back, get it.
Do it.
Two-headed monster. You need multiple running backs that can make plays, that can impact you, that can help your defense.
Yeah, and any guy that you draft would be a high – like, any guy that you draft in the second round would be a higher draft pick than Nico Collins was, a higher draft pick than Damian Pierce was, guys that you either are excited about or have been excited about in the past.
And I don't like talking about positions like – and generalizing them. Like, yeah, you don't take a running back early. Well, what if it's the top guy? What if you think this guy's a badass and you're the first team to take a running back and you think that guy can spell Joe Mixon or eventually be the guy that you rely on? That's as impactful as anything. I mean, you can sit here and just draft a D lineman, and if it's just a normal D lineman, that's not as impactful as having an elite two-headed monster at running back. Although I don't know, do they still want to run the rock?
Yeah,
I mean, it was one of their rally cries. Now all of a sudden we got all these receivers. Do they want to run the rock or not?
Yeah, no. I mean, look, Joe Mixon, I think, is going to be just as much a receiver probably as he is a running back. The way this offense is probably going to look. But I would also look at it like this, man. You're adding to a team. I don't feel like you're drafting a guy, and I feel like the likelihood is low, but maybe. But I don't feel like you're drafting a guy necessarily in the second round who's solving your problems at a given position. Like, you hear that a lot. Hey, don't draft this because you got too many needs. Well, like, who's the guy that you're necessarily drafting, and what position are you drafting where it's like, okay, that's going to fix it.
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
Like that's going to be the – that's going to solve that issue. Like, to me, it's all supplemental at this point, especially for where you're drafting it.
The last time the Texans went into a draft and they said, okay, you know what, the second round, we need to draft a defensive lineman, defensive tackle. We got to do this. And they passed on the running back or the receiver. They ended up with Ross Blacklock. He lasted 2 years. Jonathan Taylor went after that.
Yeah.
So don't get in a position where you're saying we just need to draft a defensive tackle in the second round. Coming up next, did the Astros get woke up? And it's happening again. Social media is a hell of a drug. Next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
The hits are lit here on In the Loop on Sports Radio 610. By the way, 20 minutes from now, we're going to finally hear from D'Amico Ryan, CJ Stroud, Will Anderson. Don't go anywhere. Lunchtime is going to be exciting. Time to play the hits.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day. You're listening to In the Loop with Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
When's the last time y'all unfollowed someone?
Ooh, back when I had the follow limit. I followed more than I had followers, and I had a follow limit, so I had to make some decisions. But now
you made
I
some cuts.
Yeah, I had to make some cuts. But now I got enough followers to where it's not an issue.
Phil, when's the last time you followed someone?
Honestly, probably like last week.
Okay.
The last couple weeks. Somebody retweeted something that was stupid, and it was fake news and all that stuff. I was just like, all right, man.
So you just unfollowed?
I did, yeah.
Normally,
it was worse.
Normally, if it's
just a mute.
If somebody like retweets porn on my account, I'll see that. Like something like that. I'm like, yo, what is this? That's normally what gets you to unfollow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just making sure because it can be uncomfortable. Remember when I wasn't following you for some reason?
Yeah, man, I thought I did something. I was like, man, I must have made Landry brother, mad. I must have said something. Really, I must have had a really bad take.
Dude, for some reason, it's really not as hard to accidentally unfollow someone one time, like time or another. And I was like, it was kind of, B. Scott was acting kind of awkward. This was like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, I thought I did something.
And I was like, hey, I don't know why I'm not following you. I was, so I had no idea what happened, but it was awkward, man.
Yeah.
It was awkward.
I was like, I know I got some bad takes, but don't we all?
You can actually slip. You can actually accidentally click. The other day when we were at that that uniform thing at the Post, there was a dude that was acting real weird towards me. That's a fan, like a Texans fan. And then I noticed that I'd unfollowed him, and I didn't even mean to do it either. So I was just like, oh, hey. Refollow. Good. There we go. What happened?
That's got to be the most passive aggressive insult of the internet era now.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, it is.
It's unfollow. Personal. Man. It's personal.
Yeah.
You got rappers talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a thing.
It's almost worse to unfollow than it is to like just not follow somebody to begin with.
Yeah. Just mute.
Yeah. Because I got some people like that I know where for whatever reason we just don't follow. We are aware of each other on social media, but we don't follow each other. Feels less disrespectful than if we did follow each other.
Don't try to unfriend somebody on Facebook.
Ooh, yeah.
You might as well unfriend them in life.
I have.
People be doing.
I have.
They come up to you, why you unfriend me?
Nah, there's some random. Sometimes you have random folks on Facebook. It's like, man, this is too much, bro. I'm not trying to argue with you. We're good.
It's something.
But if they can't add anything to your experience, I don't see anything wrong with it.
It's something about that next generation in my family. Like, so my mom's generation in my family, where they always get spam. So they always they always show up with a second Facebook page that's not real. Yeah, man. So I've had to unfollow them, not knowing if it was the real one, but I didn't care. I was like, man, I don't know if this is your real account or your fake account or you spammed or whatever, but
I had to unfriend the
why are you DMing me?
I had to unfriend my wife's uncle because he got hacked. He actually got hacked.
Yeah.
And this fool gonna take a picture. I guess the person who hacked him asked for the ID so they could see if it was his real account. This fool posted a picture of his real ID. So they're still spamming that account. So now they're scamming everybody and trying to make it like it's still him running the account. So they post a picture holding his ID. So I'm like, all right, sorry, Unc. You got to go, man.
Dude.
I say all this because Brandon Ayuk has unfollowed the 49ers. Mm. This used to be an eye roll, but this is something now. Like, when's the last time someone unfollowed a squad and then it was just like, hey, this is cool. This is a thing. The Ayuk drama, front and center. Got to anticipate some sort of Ayuk trade by the time the draft happens, right?
I just wonder, and I did see that his agent came out and denied that Brandon Ayuk had actually requested a trade. Who knows what's actually happening behind the scenes? But I just wonder, what is the process once you do the unfollow? Because you have to actively search for whether somebody follows somebody. Now, it's not like it just
shows up. Who are these feds that notice all this?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not like it just shows up on your timeline like maybe a like or something like that or a retweet would. So in order to find out that you've unfollowed or somebody's unfollowed you, you got to go to the follower section and do the search. So to me, there's got to be like a pipeline, you know, sort of process of, hey, the agent leaks to a reporter, hey, go check my client's followers or who he's following and see.
Oh, so you think this is a leak?
Don't find outside. There's
some Texans fans and aggregators that see everything that happens on social media.
How do you
media.
Do it, though? Because there's.
I guess you just have notifications. You're on it all the time.
Yeah. I also think the agents are the ones that's, like, following these things. Remember what the Saquon Barkley, like, oh, he's following the Houston Texans. He's following Brevin Jordan. I think that's part of the agent deal, too, to try to hype it up a little bit.
Yeah. I think the agents definitely got some burners.
That's a little PR thing.
Where he's hitting somebody up, let him know, hey, man, you might want to check that follower.
He's following CJ Stroud, or he unfollowed the team.
Yeah. Or you just got some lurkers out there, but that's wild, too. It's not like you just get the notification.
Who's lurking around Brandon Ayuk, though?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody.
It got to be the agent.
That's so specific.
Devontae Smith, he got a 3-year, $75 million contract extension that includes $51.5 million guaranteed. It automatically led to some people wondering if that's going to be the range for Nico Collins, but the Eagles secure him. Astros versus Rangers over the weekend. The Astros take 2 out of 3. They were down 12-3 in game one. However, after the Rangers threw at Yordan Alvarez, the Astros put together a 5-run inning, actually ended up outscoring the Rangers for the remainder of the series, 22-7. Kyle Tucker hit his second homer of the game in that inning, little angry bat flip. Let's hear what angry Kyle Tucker sounds like. Let's hear Kyle Tucker getting mad.
We're going to really appreciate it. I mean, whether it was an accident or not, I mean, missed him 4 times in. Almost hitting him twice and then hitting him. Not really a good look. We didn't really appreciate that, which I don't think anyone would. Kind of how things started and how it went.
Seemed like you said to something when you hit that ball and the bat flip, angst or aggression right there.
Yeah, just a little reaction to it. Just didn't really appreciate that before and how it went and kind of how it went.
Obviously, a history between these two teams. Does that carry over here or just from that one moment?
Anytime. You know, guy gets, you know, 4 pitches in on him and almost hitting him a couple times and then actually hitting him. Sure, any team wouldn't really appreciate that, whether it was an accident or not, but it is what it is. Just move on tomorrow and try and win it.
Yo, the hair on the back of my neck is standing up. I'm petrified. I'm just.
Kyle Tucker just sees about that action, boss.
Hey, man.
You're going to sound angry.
I'm scared. Telling you, man. That, like, maybe he is just about the action. Hey, I ain't here for that talking.
Nah, he's
I'm just going to swing this stick.
He's a mild-mannered dude. Got a little bit angry. The team seemed to react to his emotions.
Can you tell the difference between angry Kyle Tucker and happy Kyle Tucker?
No, I can't. They got the Braves tonight. Three-game set against the Braves. Here's who the Astros got on the bump the next few days. Spencer Arrighetti, Hunter Brown, J.P. France. That's a 21-16-8 ERA against the Braves.
Look, the Astros...
Bad practice.
The Astros have tried to sell the public on, hey, we thought we had the pitching depth, and if you look at the back end of our pitching depth, it was comparable to what was out there in free agency outside of Blake Snell, and Blake Snell cost too much money. This is a back-to-back offseason that has been fumbled and bungled by the Astros. Like, they ruined this offseason by not pursuing a back-end starter, by throwing all of that money to Josh Hader, but not accounting for the 200-plus innings that they lost in the bullpen. Like, we got to really start asking some questions about what the hell is going on over there. That brain trust with the Astros, like, I understand that they won over the weekend, but this roster is so damn flawed. Like,
Nothing you can do about it.
No, not now. There was something they could have done about it in the offseason, and the people that are hired and in charge
maybe
to
Reggie
do it.
Maybe Reggie Jackson.
What the hell is that about? We got Reggie Jackson and Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio up here telling Dana Brown what to do. And maybe they should be. I don't know who to trust. I mean, maybe that's the part that is most uncomfortable with all of this.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, Jim Crane is the best owner in Houston sports history, pro sports history, I understand that.
Yeah.
But below him,
you don't know
around
who you trust here anymore.
Who do I trust within the Astros organization to get things
trust?
Right?
Like, you know who you trust with the Rockets. You know who you trust with the Texans. I don't know who I trust.
I don't have it.
Seems like there's a lot of cooks.
I trust Jose Altuve.
By the way, Jeff Bagwell doesn't hit the same in the booth as he used to.
I could actually still listen to Jeff Bagwell.
It doesn't hit the same, though.
I separate.
You can listen to it, but it don't hit the same.
You know when it doesn't hit the same or when it actually hits even worse is when he says we. Because that's always I know it's a we because he's Jeff Bagwell. It's the Astros. But that also is a – that we is a reminder
of – You don't
of
want that on your Homer broadcast?
Influence. No. It's a reminder of the influence he has on that roster that we're looking at, of the product that we're looking at. I don't mind. He's Jeff Bagwell. I get the homerism from Jeff Bagwell. But the we has me focused more on him being responsible for the fact that they didn't do any of the things that they said that they needed to do between getting a back-end starter, a left-handed bat, or some depth to that bullpen.
Astros back at it tonight against the Atlanta Braves. Rockets, they're done. The NBA playoffs start this week. Rockets finish the season 41-41. Here's Fred VanVleet on the process.
We fell short of our goal. I want to make that clear. You know, we definitely had playoffs in our sights, and we fell short of that. But we made tremendous progress, especially if you're going to go back to kind of where things were the past few years to be able to come and turn this thing around or, you know, get it going more in the right direction has been a great accomplishment so far, but not where we want to be.
Yeah, so I got to hang around a little bit at Toyota Center for the last home game a couple of nights ago, and it was the same sort of tone that I appreciated, that we're not going to over-romanticize this 500 record thing. It is progress. It's the biggest turnaround in the NBA this season. But they did have higher hopes, and to me, the goal and the standard should still be set high despite the way the last few years have looked. I can appreciate that none of them are like, all right, 500 record, that's cool. No, we wanted to be better, and we're going to still work toward that next season. I'm with the not settling for 41-41.
They should be very pleased going 41-41.
No, they pleased is one thing, but to – expect more of yourselves. Like, it's one thing for Rockets fans to be excited about it or for us to kind of look at it and say, hey, the trajectory is up. But as a competitor, I don't want to look at it and be like, hey, 41-41, that's good. I still remember that Mavs game. I still remember that Golden State Warriors game, the opportunities that they did have down the stretch that they didn't take advantage of. The T-Wolves, yeah, all of those. Like,
that was the three-game stretch that just ended it.
And look, you can build on that. Like, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, they got a lot to build on.
But let's say, hey, you know, this was encouraging, but still not good enough.
is the hits here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. Speaking of hits, D'Amico Ryan, C.J. Stroud. Will C.J. Stroud describe Stephon Diggs as his brother? Will the B word be used? We'll hear from C.J. We'll hear from D'Amico. Might also hear from Will Anderson. The silence from the Texans finally ends momentarily.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.